You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to Shaking Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Avila.
In this episode, we're going to talk about moving from the emotional side of the brain to the cognitive side of the brain. Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchables. Sometimes you might challenge your beliefs, maybe even stretch your comfort zone a little. Most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect that you have to agree or disagree, but what we do hope is to cause some shaking bones. Amy, one of the things that I've been focusing on lately is that the brain has two sides, and there's a bridge that's called the corpus callosum that connects the two sides. And one is the emotional side, is one is the cognitive side, and you can't be one or the other. You really have to use both. But what my experience is that a lot of decisions, especially by adults, are made from the emotional side rather than the cognitive side. Matter of fact, I've even been bold enough lately to say that people vote based on the emotional side of the brain rather than cognitive side of the brain, and the candidates recognize that, and that's what they market. They market the emotional side. I use the same practice with children as I do with adults when it comes to, I call it dragging a problem from the emotional side into the cognitive side. Have you noticed some of that in terms of people staying in the emotional side versus dragging it over to the cognitive side?
Oh, definitely. And it's a huge industry. I mean, why do you think companies hire psychologists in terms of, you know, they're going to be able to sell you things because they're going to be able to hook into that emotional side. They could sell you anything when they're really good at that. So.
And I know that a lot of workshops that deal with guidance and discipline, a lot of the questions often relate to the adult's emotional side rather than cognitive side, because the cognitive side means they would actually have to change themselves. I always say that relearning is more difficult than learning because you have to get rid of something when you relearn. So a lot of the questions that relate to guidance and discipline tend to be, what do you do with a child who hits, or what do you do with a child who pulls somebody's hair, or what do you do with the child, you know, and most of those are related to getting the child to change rather than the adult to change.
Right. And it's a, you know, it's a really hard thing to change your lens. Change is hard no matter what it is, but especially in terms of, you know, looking at what is happening with young children and how your emotions come into play, in what you're modeling and how your actions are oftentimes driven by your emotions.
Yes. Yes. So I'm giving an example. I watched a four-year-old male child go over and grab a truck from another child who was playing with it. He actually was sitting on the top of it, riding around, making a lot of noise, having a ball. The child thought, well, I'm going to enjoy this too. There wasn't another truck that was available, so he just went and pushed the child off the truck and took the truck and started riding around. Well, the child who was on the truck originally started crying and yelled at the teacher, he took my truck. And when I observed this, the teacher went over and said, we don't take trucks from somebody who's already riding it. And I'm thinking, okay, how does that help with the child's feelings first? So I suggested when we talked afterwards that they might want to start with, and this is what I typically, I could tell that you really wanted the truck, and I wish that you could have that truck right now too, which is the emotional side, and then I drag it to the cognitive side by simply saying, what are you going to do while you wait until he's finished with the truck? Because that moves it into more action orientated. So I keep saying to people, it's important to start with the emotional side because you always want to recognize somebody's feelings first, and that's important for children too. But then don't leave it there. You have to move it to the cognitive side. And what some people say, they'll say, we don't want to hurt our friends. We don't want to hit our friends, which keeps it on the emotional side again.
Right. And you know what, Dan? This is something that drives my husband absolutely up the wall. Because
Really?
he mimics me with it all the time. Because, you know, we'll be having a conversation about something and you know, I'll listen to what he has to say and I'll be like, "Oh, so it sounds like, you know, this is seeming where you're at with this." And then I'll be, "So, what are you going to do with that?" And you know, to move it into action and cognitive. And so his he you know, he'll always roll his eyes at me and goes, "What are you gonna do with that?" That's because that's you know, because that's the way I tend to frame it all the time. And he's like, "Oh, I guess I haven't thought that far yet." So.
I know I used to say to my wife, what would it take to make you feel better about that? And she used to hate that after a while in terms of the process. But it is true. You have to first start from the emotional side and then you focus, okay, what do you want to do about this? And I think that's important for children, you know, to get them to think, okay, well, I understand what you want, I understand what your needs, but here are the choices. How are you going to, and which choice are you going to make? Really moves it more to the cognitive side, because they're only thinking about so and so took the truck from me, they hurt my feelings, etc. That's not going to solve any problems. So they really need to. We need to help them move it towards the cognitive side.
Right. And, you know, I think it's really important for early childhood professionals to recognize, you know, because I hear a lot of modeling, a lot of talk about the emotions and those pieces, but I don't always hear the, okay, yep, you're sad. You can be sad all you want, but, you know, just because you're sad isn't going to change things. So, where, you know, what are the next steps? How do you move forward with this? You can be as sad as long as you want. You know, you have, like you were saying, you have choices. And I don't always think that there are a lot of choices laid out for children, to help them, you know, either be as sad as they want to be, or if they're ready to move past that and to move on, that they aren't always given a lot of different options. In fact, you know, I was out observing, a couple of different places over the last couple of months, and I noticed a lot of people who just seem to be afraid of that conflict and being afraid of allowing children to be the problem solvers and to figure out what their next steps or what that cognitive piece may be for them.
And what great problem solving that is when you start with the emotional side and then move them towards the cognitive side, because they actually begin to do some self-discipline and self-control in terms of their own process. I remember when my daughter was 16, and I might have told this story before, but I'm gonna. She wanted to go to a party, and she said to me, because I believe that this practice can work at any age, but she said, I want to go to the party, and can I use the car? And I started out with her by saying, I'm really excited that you're going to the party. I can't wait to see what you'll talk about when you get back. And then I moved it to the cognitive side by saying, I can't wait to see how you're going to get there by not using our car, essentially. So moving into the more problem-solving mode, it might not have been the choice that she wanted, but the choice is still hers about whether or not she was going to the party. You know, I often use the same practice when I'm with parents. So if a parent comes in and asks, when are you going to teach my child to count to 100, or are you going to teach my child to read? I always start with the emotional side. I can tell that this is really important for you, and that this would make you feel really good if your child can count to 100, and then kind of drag it to the cognitive side by saying, what are some things that you think are important, and then I'll tell you what things are important to me, and we'll kind of negotiate what that happens. So that kind of moves it towards the cognitive side rather than simply defending the whole idea of wanting to come to 100 or a reading.
Right. And I do a lot of similar things when parents come in with, you know, certain unrealistic expectations for their child at an age where it's, you know, I know you really love your child. I know you're really concerned about them being ready for kindergarten or, you know, whatever it is on that aspect, and talking about them, about their concerns and their feelings, you know, and then reassuring them that, you know, this is what we're doing, and this is how it meets with child development, and that those other things that you may be concerned about will come.
Yeah, and I think part of it is making sure, again, that whatever we do, whether it's with children and adults, that it doesn't get stuck on the emotional side. So as children do things, and we go in and we try to help them problem solve, by saying things, I'm really sorry that you're sad, or I could tell that you're really unhappy about this, and then they stop. They really need to move on to, okay, then the next process is, what will it take? What kinds of choices can you make that will make you feel better, or change the feeling that you have if you want to? Or do you want to be sad, and is that going to take some time? Because I think it's okay for children to make a choice to stay on the emotional side for a while, but we just don't want them to stay there forever.
Right. Right. And I think it's, you know, I think it's a huge piece, like you said, not just for the children, because adults sometimes have a really hard time moving out of that emotional to cognitive. I know sometimes when I'm really emotional about some things, I need somebody to help me kick it out of there too, because I'm just spinning my wheels there and not looking at it from the cognitive side. So it's really important to have that practice, and then have people around you who can help you look at things a little bit differently and move it in that direction.
Right. So I'm always indicating it's okay to have friends, it's okay to have acquaintances, but you want to make sure that you have people that will not just keep you to the emotional side. Because we all can be around people who hug us if we need a hug, or talk to us about feelings. But what we need is adults also around us that will maybe show us some choices that we didn't see before, some avenues that we might move toward, where we can say, oh, I haven't thought about that. Is that when we make that kind of statement, I haven't thought about that, that shows that we're moving from the emotional side into the cognitive side. And like you said, for adults, it's important also in terms of that understanding.
Right. And, you know, we've talked in previous episodes and things that children learn so much more from watching us and the model we set than they do from us trying to tell them anything. So in terms of making sure that we're modeling this process as well for our own children or children whom we may be in contact with is really important.
So we can even do this with toddlers. We can say things like, that hurts, bite this. That hurts, push this. Because those kinds of things start again with the feeling statement. It hurts, it makes her cry, you know, that kind of thing. Make it simple and then move it on to what they can do. Because I think what they can do drags it from the emotional side into the cognitive side. So we can do that with very small children also in terms of their development, because that demonstrates some modeling where it's okay to have those feelings, but then there are some other choices that have to be made in terms of that.
Right. And, you know, keeping it super simple, as you said, you know, just a couple of words, not trying to get make it overly complicated because you lose very young children when you add too much to it, is a perfect way to show that.
Yeah, and simple things like when a child takes something, I will simply say, I can tell that you really wanted that. Have you asked? I mean, that drags it to the cognitive side then, because we, again, it's okay to start with, I know you really wanted that. But at the same time, the cognitive approach is, I need to ask if somebody's finished with it. And it's really a very simple statement. And sometimes, of course, with some children, it has to be said over and over again because, again, they prune information that's not relevant to them. But those kinds of things, those kinds of statements, I believe keeps it from just staying in the emotional side and moves it to the cognitive side. And what happens is children begin to use the same practice. I've heard kids say, that hurt her, push this box. I've actually heard children use those kinds of statements because they've been modeled to them. Have you noticed that too when you practice with the kids?
Oh yes, we have a lot of the, well, what do you want to do while you wait? And I like to try to put it back on the children to come up with their options if they're old enough. And most children can come up with all kinds of options on what they can do. So I've heard many of our older preschool children when they're talking to the other child, you can't have this now. I've got it. What are you going to do while you wait for your turn? And so they're doing it without me having to step in. And I've always said if I've done my job really well, I don't really need to be here. And so
Yes.
to see them modeling that and to handling that in the conversation themselves, it feels pretty good. So.
And the other component of this is that sometimes people will start with the cognitive side. In other words, they'll start with the choices, but they didn't recognize the child's feelings first. And so what, because the adult just wants to move the child forward into some direction, rather than recognizing that there is some power involved in this. This makes you feel really good when you cause him to cry. I mean, there's some power involved in that. Let's find some other things that you could do to make you feel powerful. Let's find those things. Let's talk about those things, depending on the age. But if we start with the cognitive side, then I don't think we recognize that there's some feelings behind that too.
Right. And if we're not recognizing someone's feelings that they're having it, and let me tell you, Dan, there have been many times that children that I work with have had to correct me in terms of their feelings because, I'll assume it's anger and they'll go, no, I'm frustrated. And it's really important for us to try to help model that and give them that, words to express themselves in terms of their emotion and recognizing that. Before we move on to the other pieces.
That's really important. That's why I'm always saying to kids, is that the right, have I chosen the right feeling? Or is that what you're feeling right now? And I think that would be nice if adults did that to other adults too, because sometimes we make an assumption that they're feeling sad or angry when really they're not. They're having another feeling. So I think you're right on that, that it's important when it comes to the feeling component. It's okay if a child corrects you. Not is it okay? It's important, but at the same time, getting the child to think about how they feel first, I think is an important component to be able to move on to problem solving component.
And especially like you had mentioned in terms of if they're feeling powerful and clearly they can't do, we can't allow them to do something that's hurting another child, but it's making them feel powerful, then we can look for other ways to help them feel powerful, that look at other alternatives. And so having a clear understanding and for them to have a clear understanding of what they're feeling, is important because then we can look at other similar types of things.
Right, because I had a child once push a child off a chair, and the child got back up and pushed that child off the chair, and then there was that back and forth where they pushed each other off the chair. And again, you start with the feeling you both seem to want that chair, so you've decided to push each other to see who can get it. And pushing is not one of the choices, so we'll have to look at another choice here. We're going to have to figure out something different in that component. And they decided to share the chair, which is really unusual, but they decided to put one side of their butt on one and the other one. And I just simply said, that looks like a choice that you both seem to want to make. And again, so it really creates that power that children need in terms of the process of being able to solve. I think the biggest challenge with children frequently is not giving them the power to make some realistic choices for themselves.
I see it all the time. And children are so capable, but they're not always given the opportunity to show us how capable they are in those departments of being able to solve their own problems and being able to, you know, express what their emotions are. And obviously very young children don't have the words yet, but they have ways to show us how they're feeling, and then to help them move in that direction. And I think the more opportunities we have and the more that we show children that we view them as capable human beings, the more independent they become in, you know, moving and making their own choices.
Right. Another example of that, I saw a child throw some blocks and the teacher said, "We don't throw here." Well, the child demonstrated that he could, essentially. I wanted to say that to the teacher, but I didn't. But again, perhaps a different way of that would be of going to say, it seems fun to throw. Let's decide what is a safer throw here. Let's figure out what we can throw within this space that won't hurt, like the block will. That gives the child at least some recognition first that, yeah, throwing is fun. And then now I've got to make some choices about a safer way or something safer to throw, which could be balls or newspaper, whatever, in terms of that component. But it really makes it present tense, and it moves from the emotional side to the cognitive side.
Dan, when you said the we don't throw here, I think about my family, and a lot of times I would get the we, who's we, you and the mouse in your pocket, because, you know, clearly you might not be throwing in this space, but I'm throwing here. And so in terms of really looking at the language that we use with children is really important too.
Definitely, definitely. Because again, them being so egocentric, the we means, oh, you must not be talking about me. You must be talking about somebody else that's part of this we, because I'm not part of your we, essentially.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good, really good point. Well, thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. We're hoping that you think about moving from children and adults from the emotional side to the cognitive side. If you have some questions or want continued discussion, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com. Or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
Thanks so much for listening.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more bone rattling. Stay tuned.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.